we are in the third lesson in our series, Chasing After the Wind. If you've been with us for any of the lessons in this series, by now you should know that Solomon was given great wisdom. Matter of fact, 1 Kings chapter 4 puts it this way. God gave Solomon wisdom and insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. That sounds like a lot of wisdom. That sounds like a great amount of wisdom, and he had it, and he demonstrated it, and his reputation, as we saw in the past, grew far and wide. You'll also hopefully recall that even though Solomon was blessed with this incredible wisdom, he was also blessed with incredible wealth and fame. But somehow, with all of that he had, all that God had given him, he grew disenchanted with life. Even to the point of despair and depression. As he perceived life wearing blinders, if you will, that prevented him from seeing anything other than what was under the sun, what he could observe as going on in daily experience. And as he was doing that, he decided that the wisdom of God was somehow lacking, and he started chasing after answers elsewhere. One of the things in the reading of Ecclesiastes that we find that Solomon found particularly frustrating in his investigation of things was the way time seemed to be slipping away. The time was something, again, he could not catch, grasp, get a hold of, or control. I'd be surprised if you haven't had similar feelings as Solomon had at one point or another. I mean, think about it. Think about the things we say. Have any of you ever said, there's not enough hours in the day? Or, there's not enough days in the week? Have any of you ever said, if I only had more time? Or, I'd like to help you out, but I just don't have the time. Or, I'd love to do that, but I just can't find the time. You ever tried to buy time? We say that, now you can't. But you ever try to do that, buy more time? When you've got a project, you've got something you're trying to do, and it just seems like the time is slipping away, and the deadline is creeping up on you. Or, matter of fact, it's not creeping anymore. It's fastly approaching. You say, if I could just buy more time. If I could just kick the can down the road, proverbially speaking, you know, and procrastinate and put things off a little bit longer, then certainly that time that I'm buying would help me, you know, to get things done and take the stress off. Anybody ever done any of that? Sure you have. I believe it was, I don't know which tribe to give the credit to, but I believe it's an Indian proverb that says only a white man could think that you could take a blanket and cut off one end of it and sew it onto the other end and you'd get more blanket. But again, that's what we try to do with daylight savings time. That's what they're trying to say is, what do you think you're doing? When you're just, you know, moving the clock a little bit, thinking somehow you're changing time or you're gaining more time, when reality is you're not. You might be thinking that you're gaining something, but at the end of the day, you really don't. There's still only, what, 24 hours in the day? Still only that much time. Though I've often read Ecclesiastes 3 at eulogy or memorial services, it's more than appropriate for this discussion. I'll beginning in verse 1 of Ecclesiastes 3. Solomon, writing there, says, there is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to uproot. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to tear down, and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. And then in verse 9 he says, what does the worker gain from his toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on men. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men. Yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live. That everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God.
I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, and nothing taken from it. God does it, he says, so that men will revere him.
Now, do you hear Solomon? Do you hear what he's saying? He's saying there's a time or a season for everything in life, but there wasn't time enough in any season of his life for everything that he wanted to do. That was his perception. The time was just this thing that you chased after, and you could do things, you could accomplish things, but it seemed like the time to do something was not long enough to get it done. He's saying what we say, time is just slipping away. The seasons are too short. Now, how many of you think the winter season of Rockford's too short? Most of us think it's maybe a little bit too long. But the seasons of life can seem to go by quickly. We talk about that, seasons of life. We talk about, you know, the spring of your life when you're young. And then, you know, when you start to mature some, we're talking about, you know, the summer years and then the fall. And that's, I'm in the late fall. And then there's you know, the winter years. We even talk that way about seasons of life and how quickly they pass. By man's standards, even a long life isn't nearly long enough. Solomon, you may remember back in 1 Kings chapter 3, in our first lesson in this series, was promised by God that if he would just use the wisdom God gave him, he would just use it, walk in it, live by it, that he would be granted a long life. We know we're promised that as well. That if we would honor our fathers and mother or our parents, we'll live a long life on earth. If we would listen to God, we'd have a longer life, a more fulfilling, productive, satisfying life. If we would just listen to God, use that wisdom that he gives us. But still, no matter how long of a life that we have, it doesn't seem to be, at the end of it, long enough. Throughout his discourse in Ecclesiastes, Solomon laments about the brevity of life over and over and over again. And I want to give you just a few excerpts. In Ecclesiastes 3, verse 19 through 20, he writes, "Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless." And then he says, "All go to the same place. All come from dust. And to dust all return." You've heard that phrase before, right? Well, it comes from the words of Solomon. What's he saying? You know, death awaits us all. Every living thing, including man and woman, death awaits. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Then Ecclesiastes 6, verse 3 through 6, he says, "A man may have 100 children and live many years. Yet no matter how long he lives, if he cannot enjoy his prosperity and does not receive proper burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he is." It comes without meaning. He's talking about that stillborn child. "It departs in darkness, and in darkness its name is shrouded. Though it never saw the sun or knew anything, it has far more rest than does the man who lives. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice over, but fails to enjoy his prosperity, do not all go to the same place?" Wow. You talk about a sad perspective on life, huh? Better not to have lived than to live and only have a short time to do it in. Even if you live 2,000 years, he says, well, if you don't enjoy prosperity, he's not just talking about money, but enjoy life. Have the things that God blesses you with and be able to enjoy them, then what good is it? He says it's meaningless, totally meaningless. Then Ecclesiastes 8, verse 8, he says, "No man has power over the wind to contain it, for no one has power over the day of his death. This too is meaningless." Again, that idea of chasing the wind. No one has power over the wind to contain it. And he's saying no one can determine the day of his death. He seems to be saying they would like to be able to determine the day of his death, but he'd like it to be in the distant future, if at all. I had an aunt who has now been with the Lord for some time now, but she used to say she wished she knew the time and place that she would die. And I said, why would you want to know that, Aunt Lavelle? And she says, because I'd never go near that place on that day. Really? I don't think it works that way, see, to be able to know the time and place of your death. But he is saying, you know what? I wish I could contain it. I wish I could determine it. I wish I could somehow live much longer. Then Ecclesiastes 9, verse 4 through 6, he says, anyone who's among the living has hope, but even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. For the living know that they'll die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, hate, and jealousy have long since vanished. Never again will they have part in anything that happens under the sun. Even a live dog is better than a dead lion. What in the world is he talking about? Well, see, being royalty, being a king, he's really saying the pauper, you know, the person who's the lowest subject in my kingdom. If he's living, he's better off than I will be when I'm dead. Life is what matters, he's saying. And he's talking about the physical life, life upon this earth. And he says it's meaningless then to live, at least by his observation, his perception, his perspective, his conclusion, at everything he looks at under the sun. So you get the idea. He was so preoccupied with the passing of time that he wasted time on foolish pursuits after time. And time after time. He was so consumed with the fear of death that he lost an appreciation for life. It appears that he grew lethargic in his sober moments, but almost cavalier at other times. He was perhaps the founder of that motto, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. Live it up while you can, because you don't have long. That kind of idea. Now, none of us have ever developed such a mentality or thought that or lived that way, have we? Well, maybe if people observed us, they might think that's what we're doing, or some of us have done. And we certainly know people who that appears to be the way they approach life. Just go for the gusto, enjoy what you can, grab all the pleasure you can, because you don't have long. It is true that life on earth is short compared to eternity. But letting that reality get us down, or spending all of our time partying down, well, those are extremes we ought to avoid. We really need to resist those extremes. In fact, the New Testament encourages us to embrace the truth of the brevity of life. Yes, to admit that is true, but to make the most of the time we have. Rather than grieving over it, lamenting it, and wasting it, we should make the most of it. Matter of fact, in James 4:14, it says, what is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. See, isn't that what Solomon is saying he sees? That's how he's observing things? Well, James is telling us that's true. Compared to eternity, we're just like a vapor that appears and then we fade away. But James goes on to say that knowing that, understanding that, embracing that, we should make plans accordingly, always submitting our daily agenda to the will of God. Knowing that we don't have much time, make the most of that time honoring God and honoring others. That's what James would tell us. That's what really Solomon will conclude later, and we'll talk more about that next week. The Apostle Paul urges us in the New Testament. He says, be very careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. Some translations say redeeming the time, or making the most of the time, because the days are evil. What do you mean the days are evil? Are the days evil in themselves? No, but the idea seems to be that they're full of evil, There's a lot of evil going on in the world. There's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of things that are being done that are atrocities. There are people being hurt by people who don't care, who are maybe trying to seize life by taking away from somebody else where they can't enjoy life at all, taking away what they have, the things God has blessed with them, just so that they can say, I've got a better life. Well, we're supposed to have the perspective again that we don't have a lot of time. Let's make the most of our time. Make the most of our time. Did you ever stop to think that we may have to answer to God about how we spend our time? We're to be good stewards of everything that God blesses us with. We often think about our money. Yes, we need to be good stewards with that. We need to be good stewards with our relationships. We talked about that last week. We need to be good stewards with our time as well, recognizing that God gives us just so much, and we need to spend it well and wisely. I don't know how much time I personally have left on this side of glory. None of us do. I may live to be a ripe old age, but even if I do, there are many more years behind me now than I believe are in front of me. I'm 65. Do the math. How long am I going to be able to continue doing what I do? I don't know. How many more years can I expect to even have the privilege of standing in this pulpit and sharing God's word with you? I don't know. Now, before you maybe say something rash, afterwards say like, well, Steve, you can stand in that pulpit and preach just as long as you live, and we pray you live to be 130. Well, you know what? Thank you. But that might not be the best thing for the church here. For me at 130, if I was granted that much time to be still standing up here, well, if I could even see, you know, and even turn the page, I don't remember where, you know, but do it, and I'll, no, it might not be the best thing, you know, for the church or for me. I pray I have the wisdom to know when it's time. See, that's another thing. Have perspective about the time. And what do you do with the time? I pray I have the wisdom to know when it's time. And sometimes it's not about how much time. It's about where are you on that timeline and that time scale, and how are you doing? I pray I'll know. And I pray that if I don't know, I pray you have the wisdom to know, and you'll approach me graciously and kindly and with love. And some of you will be doing it like I was going to say, oh, Steve, come here. You know, I think both of us need to retire. You know, maybe, I don't know. But that I'll be able to receive that. So there's a time. We have time. And we need to make the most of that time. See, because with advanced age comes increasing limitations for most people, if not everybody. And I think really for everybody, it's a matter of the degree of limitation or how limited. It depends on our health, our strength. It depends on a lot of factors. But with age comes some change. And some of that change is that we begin to be limited in what we can do. I remember when my doctor told me, when I thought I had a heart attack, would have been about 50 at the time. Thought I had a heart attack, and it wasn't, just some muscle strain. I remember the doctor telling me, said, you're not 40 anymore. You got to slow down. He also said, and you got to limit your stress. What do you do for a living? I said, well, I'm a pastor. He said, well, you've thought about getting another job? But, you know, the idea, you're not 40 anymore, or you're not 30 anymore, you're not 20 anymore, you're not. Even the doctors say they recognize, though we try to hold on to life, we try to maintain good health, and we need to be good stewards with that once again, that, yes, things happen. And we're going to talk again more about that next week, Solomon's perspective about the aging process. And it was Moses who said this in Psalm 90, though the length of our days is 70 years or 80, if we have the strength, he says, yet their span can be but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Now, I know we sing this, I'll fly away, oh glory. And we're singing, rejoicing, because we really do believe we're going to fly away, that we're not going to just, you know, just deteriorate on the runway. You understand what I'm saying? We do believe that we're going to fly away. We sang earlier, and up ahead, eternity, in the song Abide With Me. We believe that. We're counting on that. But nonetheless, he says in verse 12, teach us to number our days aright that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Now notice his perspective. Solomon had wisdom where he should have been already doing that. But Moses is telling us if we'll do that, we'll actually gain wisdom in the process. We should have the wisdom to do it, but if we'll do that, if we'll number our days aright, what does that mean? Well, Mondays, one, two, Tuesday, two. Just count our days, make sure they're on a calendar and we're using the correct calendar, whether it's Gregorian or Roman or whatever. No, he's not talking about that. But he is talking about recognize you only have a number of days and live right every day. And in the process that he says you'll actually gain wisdom and perspective about life, the value of every minute of every day. And however many days we have, we will make them count. It's not about counting the days, it's about making them count. I've shared this testimony with many of you before, but I think it bears repeating here again. My brother-in-law, David Oberst, battled cancer for several years. After surgery and a series of grueling chemo treatments, he was blessed with a few more years of remission. And those were days we celebrated, and it was wonderful. But the dreaded disease returned with a vengeance. And Dave fought valiantly, still going through more chemo treatments and trying to do the good things, the right things. But this time, the cancer only worsened. Tim McGraw had a song in the country charts that year that became Dave's mantra. Live like you're dying. But rather than, as the song declares, if you ever listen to it, that the thing to do is go skydiving and bull riding, you know, and go for the gusto, try to, you know, do a bunch of crazy things and last, but he saw his days to be more valuable than to be thrown away on selfish pursuits. He was at his kids' ball games in the freezing rain, cheering them on. And not just his kids, nieces and nephews as well. He was at about every activity. And if it was a recital, well, he was on those hard bleachers or hard benches at the school, again, encouraging them, applauding them, supporting them, no matter how badly he felt. And though he didn't broadcast it, it was obvious. Much of the time, he felt horrible. I remember being at one such event, and I was lamenting about how, oh man, these hard bleachers, and it's cold out here, and whatever, and I looked over at him as he was throwing up for the third time, and I said, oh God, forgive me. I'm complaining, and here he is, putting aside how he feels, using precious time, ever so precious time, for somebody else. He was at church when others with much less severe maladies stayed at home. He lived and loved with every ounce of strength until his last minute on this side of glory was spent. He went to work when he couldn't hardly hold his head up and spent his breaks curled up on the office floor. But he worked as long as he could, not for himself, to provide for his family. He's one of many who've showed me what it means to number your days, to make them count. Of course, the supreme example of this principle is Jesus. Did you know he was time conscious? Jesus, the Son of God, was time conscious. He realized very early on that his time here was limited, and he made the most of every minute, of every hour, of every day that he had. In John 2, verse 4, he told his mother that his time had not come yet. And that's the story again about Cana, you know, and the turning water to wine. But he says it's not time yet for me to begin my public ministry. He still did what she asked him to do, but he did it very quietly, did it very privately. Only a few people were aware of what he'd done. But see, he was time conscious. My time has not come yet. Later on in John 12:23, he announced to his disciples that the hour had come for him to be glorified. For again, people to know who he was, for people to see clearly that he was the Son of God and that he had come to save them from their sins, that he was the Messiah, he was the Christ, the time had come. And then in Mark 14:41, he said again, the hour had come for him to be delivered over to those who would crucify him. Think about that. We talked earlier about knowing the time when you're going to die. Jesus did know. Now, I'm not going to tell you that it gave him great comfort to know that. Matter of fact, read about Gethsemane. Read about what happened in the garden. About how he wrestled and struggled and prayed over that. But knowing that the time was precious and it was time for this to take place, it was time to fulfill God's will, it was time to do what he'd come to do, he surrendered to it. I'm so thankful that Jesus used his time wisely. Aren't you? I'm so thankful that when it came to time, Jesus didn't use his time selfishly, but he used it in serving his Father and serving us. I'm so thankful for that, aren't you? What about your time? What is it time for you to do? What do you think God is orchestrating? What do you think Jesus has got on his blueprint for you that he has for you to do in the time that you have? What do you know very clearly that Jesus has directed you to do, but you haven't done? That you're putting it off. Maybe until a more convenient time, or you think, well, you know what, when I'm older and I don't have anything else to do, don't care about other things so much anymore, then I'll give that a priority. Is that happening? Remember, time is passing by quickly for all of us. And none of us has a promise of another hour, let alone another day, week, month, or year. None of us do. And one thing I am sure of, I'm confident of, we're not to waste our time chasing after more time. That's what Solomon did. Or waste our time chasing after things we think are going to make our time more fulfilling when all they're going to do is leave us empty, meaningless life spent. We need to take advantage, do we not, of the time we have. We need to take inventory of our time. Seize the moment, not for self, but for God and for others. In Romans 13, Paul said this, and do this understanding the present time. The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over, he says. The day is almost here. And he goes on to say, so let's put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Notice that, understanding the present time. Understanding the moment that we're in. Understanding today. Understanding that. Wake up. Don't waste the time. Don't sleep it away. Don't fritter it away. It's priceless. Live it in the right way. Some of us, I know, can also be preoccupied not just with the future and how little of it we think we might have, but also with the past. We can live in the past. But, you know, hang on to any moment once it's gone can deaden us to the joys and lessons of the present. Dwelling on hopes or fears of the future, too, as Solomon seemed to do, is an illusion. And it robs us of present life as well. Another dear friend of mine, many of you had the opportunity to meet, if not the opportunity to get to know as well as I was privileged to, the husband of Kathy Brogren, who's down in the education wing right now, Lynn. One of the things he said that stuck with me, thought was very profound: yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. Yes, we need to learn from the past, plan for whatever future we believe God has for us, but we need to live for today, and we need to live for the Lord and for others. I mentioned earlier that Solomon's obsession with time and time passing, and also his fear of dying, really did not only frustrate him, it froze him to where for a period of time he wasn't productive, he wasn't using his time wisely, he wasn't. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14 and 15, listen very carefully. It says, since the children, and that's us folks, have flesh and blood, Jesus too shared in our humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death. That is the devil. And listen very carefully to this. And free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. Jesus died and rose again so that we would not live as Solomon was living in fear of dying. Yes, we would know that we would fly away. That I'm going to pass on from this life to another because of what Jesus did on the cross. I have eternity before me. And when you think about it from that perspective, yes, it's right that this time I have here is maybe a drop in the bucket compared to that. Why would I forfeit that, wasting away my time here on myself, when I can have that and have an abundant and fulfilling and glorious life in the now? If I just take the wisdom of God, listen to it, live by it, and be blessed.